Welcome to Crafting Solutions to Conflict, a podcast exploring how to deal effectively with conflict, actual and potential, good and bad. Engaging guests discuss a range of insights, and I cover tips and topics based on my 35-year fascination with conflict and my experience helping people with it. I'm your host, Jane Bettel, and my goal is to share a perspective on conflict that is both practical and positive. My guest today is Dr. Gleb Sapirsky, the CEO of Disaster Avoidance Experts, LLC. When we spoke on March 25th, 2020, cases of COVID-19 were skyrocketing, especially in New York City, where Gleb lived as a child. Gleb, thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast. I'm looking forward to your insights that can help us feel a little more confident and have practical application.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm delighted. So, Gleb, let me start by asking you this. How did you come to be where you are today? What led you on the path that you've been on?
My journey actually began my childhood in learning about decision making, because I saw my parents making some bad decisions when they, as pretty much everyone in our society around the world, follow the traditional trope of going with your gut, trusting your intuitions, following your instincts. And their instincts, unfortunately, often didn't agree with each other. Their guts disagreed often. So they had a lot of conflicts. So, for example, my mom, she liked nice clothing. So she'd go out and she'd buy a $100 sweater. And then my dad was kind of a cheapskate. So when she'd come home, he'd yell at her saying, no sweater should be worth over $20. And then they'd go at it, bringing up their past griefs and so on. You know how these conflicts go. So that was not great for me as a kid, seeing that, experiencing that. Had a negative impact pretty clearly on my development. I already saw that even back then, it wasn't helpful. It wasn't really changing anything, their behaviors, and they just kept going at it. So that was bad. But the worst time was when my dad, so he was a real estate agent, and his income was variable because it was based on commissions. And there was about a six-month period where he made a lot of money. But he told my mom he made very little money and hid it from her, probably because he didn't want her to spend it on sweaters.
Yes.
And then he bought an apartment elsewhere and leased it out to some folks. Well, in a couple of years, my mom found out. And she was so mad. She was very pissed, very angry. There was this huge, big blowout fight. She ended up kicking him out of the house. So he had to live in the apartment that he bought for others. And as a kid, living without my dad, they eventually reconciled, but you could never really trust him again. And that was really hard for me, living without my dad, just seeing him rarely, living with my mom. That was traumatic. And so having that experience, that really especially pushed me into thinking about how do people make decisions? How do adults make decisions? How, why did nobody sit me down and tell me, hey, kiddo, here's how you make decisions and manage risks, manage problems, manage conflicts? And then as I got to high school, that wasn't taught either, decision-making management. And neither was it taught in college. So I decided that that's just something that's really important with my background, and I decided to study it. So I started studying it, reading the available literature out there on this topic. And as I began to gain expertise in it, other people began to ask me about it. So I became a trainer, speaker, consultant, and coach in decision-making, risk management, addressing strategic planning issues with these types of questions. And then as the literature out there was pretty sparse, broad literature. So I decided I needed to go to academia. So I went to academia and I studied this topic for 15 years in academic settings. I was a professor at Ohio State for 7 years, published a whole bunch of peer-reviewed papers. And so I did that. At the same time, I still did on the side, moonlighting as a consultant, coach, trainer, and speaker. And so that's what my work is about. And that's what I brought together in my most recent book, Never Go With Your Gut, How Pioneering Leaders Make the Best Decisions and Avoid Business Disasters. And that was published in November 2019 And now this new one that's published in April 2020 is called The Blind Spots Between Us, How to Overcome Unconscious Cognitive Bias and Build Better Relationships. So that's my work. That's what I do. That's what I focus on. And that's the journey that led me here.
Well, I obviously love the titles of the books. They really are grabbers. I want to take you back for a moment to when you were yourself in academics as a student and some of the studies that captured your attention. What made you decide to study neuroscience? Why did that seem like a good thing to you when you had this interest in decision making?
Simple. That was the area that actually studied decision-making. So if you look at the judgment and decision-making society, that society is made up of neuroscientists, behavioral economists, people who study the brain, because our brains, our mental patterns is what determines how we make decisions. Unfortunately, what the research on this topic shows, what I learned, is that the intuitive patterns of decision-making are not adapted to the modern environment. They're adapted to the savanna environment when we were living in small tribes of 15 people to 150 people, and when we were hunters, foragers, and gatherers. So, for example, how do we react to threats? Our reaction to threats, overwhelmingly, is the fight-or-flight response. The fight-or-flight response was wonderful in the savanna environment when we needed to jump at 100 shadows to get away from that one saber-toothed tiger. You might have heard of it as the saber-toothed tiger response.
Yes.
It's great for those intense, immediate, in-the-moment threats when you have a car barreling at you. But we have many less saber-toothed tigers in the modern environment. Most of our threats in the modern environment are of a different type. You know, when we get a constructive critical email from a client, let's say it that way.
Yes.
Our temptation is to, again, react with a defensive response, the flight response, ignoring that email, not paying attention to it, or the fight response, which is to write back an email saying, no, I'm right, you're wrong, you're a jerk. Neither of those would be helpful.
No.
But that is the intuitive response. The right response is to take a step back, process the emotions, address the emotions, calm down that fight or flight response, then figure out what caused the customer to write the irate email, figure out how to change the underlying patterns to reduce or ideally prevent all the irate, future irate emails, and then to calmly in the moment address the current customer complaint. That is not intuitive at all. That is a very complex behavior that is very much learned. So as opposed to the natural primitive response, this is a civilized response. And civilization, of course, is how you adapt, is how you live in the modern complex society. So that's a civilized response that really doesn't go with your gut. So that's kind of one type of threat. And of course, the other type of threat is what we're seeing right now with COVID-19, slow-moving train wrecks that have that slowly come on, not immediate in the moment crisis, and have a momentous long-term impact. And
yes,
we are not adapted well at all to deal with slow-moving train wrecks and long-term impact phenomena, just because it's not what we're evolved for. So right now, a lot of people are making very bad decisions about how to deal, cope, and plan for the COVID-19 pandemic, and as well as many other sort of related similar issues that we are not well adapted to deal with.
Understood. And I think just the stress of it is probably not helping anyone at all, that even if we were generally pretty good decision makers, right now we may not be at our best.
Yes, and the stress comes from the fight or flight response, because it's what's happening is your gut intuition telling you to, you need to fix this problem right now. Because in the savanna environment, that was the kind of fixes we had. We had immediate fixes to the immediate problems. This is a completely different situation. You know, we couldn't store up food in the savanna environment. You know, we couldn't freeze them. If we killed a mammoth, we couldn't freeze the meat. So we are not well prepared to respond to it, which is why you see hoarding and so on, other problems. We can talk about that. But anyway, so the stress, the anxiety, the depression, all of these negative emotions, which I certainly feel, they come from that savanna environment and they tell you to do the wrong things. So this is where a lot of danger comes from, where people feel stress, they feel anxiety, they react to it and they give in to the stress and the anxiety and they do things that really are not helpful for them in the long run and that harms them. So this is a dangerous time to give in to stress, anxiety, and to depression.
I know in your writings, and when we finish, I'll certainly ask you to tell folks where they could read more and learn more about the work that you've done, because there is a lot of value to that. I know you've mentioned another aspect beyond the life on the savannah part, which is our natural, I guess, cognitive biases.
That's right. So the cognitive biases are the specific dangerous judgment errors that come from how our brain is wired. And a lot of the problems come from the savanna environment. So that fight or flight response causes a number of specific problems. And these specific problems, systematic patterns of dangerous judgment errors, are called cognitive biases. And again, there are some others that come not from the fight or flight response, which we can go into later. But talking about the fight or flight response, we can go to the, again, COVID-19 pandemic. Here are three primary cognitive biases that cause us to make bad, bad decisions around the COVID-19 pandemic. First, normalcy bias. Now, our brain tends to have the sense feeling that the immediate future or the long-term future will look like the past. So just that the future will look like the past. It will be normal. So right now, a lot of folks overwhelmingly are thinking that, you know, in a few weeks, maybe a month or two, we'll go back to normal. We'll go back to what the situation was in February 2020 in the US here. This is completely unrealistic. Absolutely unrealistic. Will not happen. It will take, according to the best health experts, the WHO, the CDC, Dr. Fauci, it will take us at least 18 months, and this is a very optimistic scenario, to create a vaccine. We will not be able to deal with this pandemic before we create a vaccine because it will keep going around. So it will take us 18 months to create a vaccine. Now, that will be just to create the initial viable vaccine that will be hopefully cure people, hopefully prevent the disease. If you create that vaccine, then it will take maybe another year or another 18 months to produce enough of it for the population, then distribute it to all the centers of the United States, and then vaccinate everyone. So that will take a great deal of time. And of course, you also have to have the protective equipment for people who vaccinate. That's another story. So it will take maybe about 3 years in an optimistic scenario where the initial vaccine we create is going to be perfectly great. That's unlikely. Vaccine is unlikely to be great. I mean, look at the flu vaccine. We have still not created an effective flu vaccine. The flu vaccine that we have is only 50% effective. I don't know if you know that.
Many years of doing it. This is not a brand new thing.
Yep, it's not a brand new thing, and it's only 50% effective, which means it decreases the disease infection rate by 50%. So what if we can't find an effective vaccine for COVID-19 for a few years, maybe even never, because we have not been able to find a flu vaccine. And of course, the flu virus is pretty similar to the COVID-19 virus, it's just much more deadly, the COVID-19. So if it is the situation that the COVID-19 acts like the flu and we can't find an effective vaccine, then we'll have to be dealing with this for our whole lifetime, this infection disruption to our life. Yeah. So given this, the future will look very different than the past. It's just absolutely, even the most optimistic scenario, 3 years of what we're dealing with right now will very much change people's behavior, mindset, styles, and so on. So that's the first one. That's the normalcy bias. Another one, it's called the planning fallacy. Now, when we make plans, we really are very optimistic about ourselves and our plans. We like ourselves, we like our plans. So we tend to think that things will go according to plan. Unfortunately, we don't account for major external disruptors like COVID-19 or things that we are not experiencing, transition in our society. Let's say you're running a small business and your accountant gets hit by a bus. And, you know, what are you going to do then? This key employee, do you have someone to replace this person? Most small businesses do not. So this is something we don't plan for. And this is another issue that right now a lot of people's plans are disrupted and they have not made contingencies and reserves to address the potential likelihood of their plans being disrupted. So they're really not distributing their resources, their time, and their efforts in the right manner. And finally, last but not least, we tend to very much prioritize short term. And it's very natural with this fight or flight response. It's causing us to orient toward the short term and fix the immediate problem and ignore the long term. Because in a savanna environment, all the kind of problems that we experienced were overwhelmingly short term problems.
But there's a tiger right now.
Yes, exactly.
That tiger.
Exactly. You know, you don't have the resources to, you know, go and build a house. You don't have a bank to save your resources in, right? So it's very unnatural and not intuitive for us to think toward the long term. And this cognitive bias is known as hyperbolic discounting. So we're not thinking about what the world will look like in that 3-year, very optimistic scenario or, you know, let's say a moderate scenario where 5 years it will take them to find an effective vaccine, or the pessimistic scenario where they never find an effective vaccine. So we're not thinking about that. We're not preparing for that world. We're preparing for the world 2 weeks from now. And that's really bad and dangerous and harmful for us. So these are just three cognitive biases, and there are, of course, many others that are harming us in being able to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic.
Well, this is bleak. Gee, Gleb, given that we have all of these things that are holding us back, I guess is the first way I think of it, mm-hmm. or even steering us in wrong directions. There's the frozen part, and then there's the, well, I'll just do the wrong thing part. For people who today feel, whoops, I have not done good planning. Mm. What do I do now? Is it too late? Do I give up hope? How do I do my best starting now and going forward? What's your advice in that area?
Well, first of all, you should never give up hope. You know, as long as you're still alive, there's hope. So that's the first thing. Now, should also make you hopeful is that because you're doing the smart thing and listening to this podcast, you're having this realization that right now, you know, you'd be much worse off if you weren't listening to this podcast and having this realization.
Good.
Given that you are having this realization, what you want to be thinking about is not the immediate future, not 2 weeks from now, but 3 years from now. In that optimistic scenario, let's just not even talk about the pessimistic one. In that optimistic scenario, 3 years from now, you know, optimistically, this thing will be over. Now, what will your life be like during these 3 years, and where do you want it to be 3 years from now? So you mm-hmm. want to look at that long-term vision. If you own a restaurant, so lots of people own restaurants, I would definitely get out of the restaurant business. I'm sorry to say that, but it's unless you own a restaurant that's made delivery only, you are not going to be well off. Ooh, this is not going to work out. So this mm-hmm. is a time to cut your losses, not just hope and pray that everything will be okay. Not good, not a good strategy.
Yeah. Right.
If you are in a different area, so let's just start talking about professions. If you're in a different area, let's say you're a lawyer. Many lawyers out there. So if you're a lawyer, you want to be thinking about how do you transition to virtually serving mm-hmm. your clients. Mm-hmm. And that means the first thing that you need to do for any client relationship is to build up trust and cultivate that trust. So you want to be thinking right now about how you will change the way you build up trust with your clients, because you ain't going to be doing it face-to-face. So this, you know, face-to-face cultivation of trust, which is the main cultivation of trust, is not going to work. So you need to be thinking right now about how you will change that. And of course, all of these other things can be done. You know, you can electronically sign documents and so on. But the cultivation of trust will always be something that is very difficult to replace, and there are currently no apps that easily do that. But of course, you can do that if you're smart about how you go about it. So that's kind of another area. So these are kind of solopreneur, small business. Now, if you're running a business in a leadership position in a business, whether it's a small business, medium-sized, whatever, or if you're a manager in a larger business and you're moving to working from home, you need to be thinking not simply about changing your service delivery to customers, to clients, which we talked about a little bit with the lawyer example, and building up trust, but you also want to be thinking about internal systems, internal processes. Right now, people who are working at home, you've said, hey, let's work at home, and people are right now doing that on adrenaline. They are, you know, working at home, they are excited, scared, enthusiastic, they are willing to support the company. That will not last.
Yes.
Adrenaline will not last. So you want to be thinking about changing the structure of your company in such a way as to adapt it to being a virtual company, having people work at home. That means figuring out how to motivate people when they're not coming into office every day and seeing their colleagues and working. This is one of the most important problems in virtual collaboration mm-hmm. is how do you motivate people? Another one, how do you have accountability? How do you solve problems and so on? How do you collaborate effectively? These are things you want to be thinking about. So these are the kind of things from a professional side. From a personal side, what you want to be thinking about is how do you maintain those relationships? Relationships are really so critically important for our lives.
Yes.
Especially if you're someone who's younger and you are out and about, depending if you're an essential service provider or something like that, you probably want to be spending less time with older relatives, ideally none. It's socially distanced, right?
Well, I know I've heard some concerns about the young people being sent home to college where they are themselves quite healthy often, but yes. they could then infect the people back home, especially the grandparents, if they see them
yes.
who are older and perhaps have the underlying conditions and so forth. So these, as you say, are interesting challenges.
Yes, and this is something for you to think about. How can you socially distance or isolate? Let's say, so if you have your child coming home, let's say you yourself are 40 and your daughter is 20 and she's coming home and you have a grandparent who's 60 in your household. So you probably want to be thinking about, you know, maybe you can set up your basement for your daughter and have her spend 14 days there quarantined, essentially self-quarantined mm-hmm. to isolate her from the grandparents, for example. So that might be something for you to think about, or isolate the grandparents depending on the situation, whatever the grandparent is willing to do it.
They might like to go to the basement themselves. It'll be quieter down there, I imagine.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. So this is something that you want to be thinking about, how to make sure to prevent, and especially if they're coming from New York City, which is right now very bad.
Off, scary. Very scary.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I grew up in New York City, so, you know, non-lingual those people. Yeah. I have a lot of still relatives there. So, yeah. So, this is a tough spot. So, you want to be thinking about how to preserve and maintain your relationships, of course, in the nuclear family, but also not the nuclear family. How are you going to interact with your friends, with your neighbors, with other people who are around the country? Family members are dispersed around the country. You won't be able to travel easily to see them anymore. It'll be very hard, and you probably don't want to take the risk of doing a car trip where on a gas pit stop, you can be infected with COVID-19. Not a good idea. So you want to make sure to prepare for much more social distancing and how to change your relationships to be socially distanced for at least the next 3 years. And this is going to sound tough, and it's tough for me. So, you know, I'm not happy about it either, but this is the reality of the situation. The faster you accept it, the more prepared you will be for the future.
I'm going to jump right in there, Gleb, because I think that is so critical, what you just said. And as I hear it, it's accept that we have gone a little bit beyond the savannah and use that ability to accept it. I don't like it, but this is the reality.
Yeah.
And I can plan. I can have a short-term plan, which is how do I get through today and tomorrow, the somewhat longer term, and then truly, what do I want my life to look like after 3 years, and how do I get to that point?
Well, what you want to do at that point is not simply plan for 3 years, the optimistic scenario. So this is critical. You want to develop a number of scenarios, at least three scenarios. What will your life look like in the optimistic scenario if this is over after 3 years? What will it look like in the moderate scenario if it will take 5 to 7 years? And what will it look like in the pessimistic scenario if it will never end and we'll just have an ineffective vaccine? So you want to make sure to have a variety of scenarios and have a plan for your life, for your business, for your relationships, for everything. Now, planning is the way we deal with our unfortunate problematic intuitions from the savannah. Because when you're planning, you can be in a cool and rational state. And you can be, hey, you know, this is what I logically, rationally want to do, rather than the hot, emotional, triggered state in the moment, which so many people are in emergency mode right now, and they're not making good decisions when they're following their gut. So you want to be thinking about various scenarios and where you want to be. So let's say in the three-year scenario, if you think that, hey, you know, let's imagine that scenario happens. And of course, you'll find out whether it happens or not in 18 months when we might or might not have that vaccine. If we do have that vaccine, great, and it's perfect, that's great, that's going to be the optimistic scenario. But we will not find out whether we have the optimistic scenario or not for the next 18 months or so. So in the optimistic scenario, you want to be ready and prepared for, hey, there's a transition, there's going to be a slow, gradual transition as more and more people get vaccinated for our life to change, to be able to interact face-to-face more. Now, something you want to be able to remember is that a lot of people will be used to not interacting face-to-face.
It will be different.
It will be very different. So you might want to capitalize on that fact that it will be different and continue to provide your service virtually. That might be one way that you go, depending on your preference. And especially if you're an introvert, but if you're an extrovert and you kind of have been sitting and, you know, clenching your fists until you can finally meet other people, then you want to be able to take advantage of that and have, you know, a way of people who have been vaccinated maybe have that choice of, hey, I'm doing events for people who are vaccinated or something like that. So some way to separate out the people who have been vaccinated from people who aren't and how you interact socially with. So these are things for you to be thinking about as you're changing your behavior.
Well, this is so helpful because there are some specific ideas. And as I said a couple of minutes ago, there are some very specific ideas in your writings, which will be, I think, very, well, useful and motivating. And I think also reassuring that it's not as soon as my adrenaline disappears, whoops, I just have nothing. Mm-hmm. That there are things that we can do. So, Gleb, I'm going to ask you to tell listeners where they can find some information about what you're providing in terms of information out there, also about how they would contact you to learn more about the work that you do as a consultant and as a coach and just helping all of us to get better at this, to move beyond the savannah, I'm going to call it.
Yeah, that's a good way of calling it. Well, as I mentioned in the beginning, I have two books out, Never Go With Your Gut, How Pioneering Leaders Make the Best Decisions and Avoid Business Disasters, published by a great traditional publisher called Career Press. So it's available in hard copy, in digital book, in audio book. So check that out. And that's going to be more in professional decision making. Now, on relationships, if you want to help and save, protect your relationships, take a look at the blind spots between us, how to overcome unconscious cognitive bias and build better relationships. And that's published by another great traditional publisher called New Harbinger. That's available on audiobook, on hard copy and digital copy. Probably don't want to go to the bookstore right now, but it would be, it's in bookstores, but bookstores are closed. So unless your state has openings. So check it out online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and so on. Now, my own information is available on disaster avoidance experts.com. Again, disaster avoidance experts.com. That's where I have my blogs, videos, podcasts, decision aids, guides, manuals, classes, lots of online classes right now, much less in-person speaking and training, consulting, coaching, which I do virtually as well. And if you want to especially check out an online class, a free online class of 8 video-based modules on disaster avoidance experts.com/subscribe. That's about how to make the wisest decisions, the wise decision maker course. Again, disaster avoidance experts.com/subscribe. And finally, I'm very active on LinkedIn. So check me out there. Ask me any questions about anything you've heard on this podcast. Connect with me and tell me you heard me on this podcast. Dr. Gleb Tsipursky, GlebTsipursky.
Thank you. And I recommend that people check out some of these terrific resources. It would have been interesting at any time, but especially on point in the times we are in.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Gleb, and we will wish our listeners and each other good health.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the Crafting Solutions to Conflict podcast, please share it. Leave a rating or review. Subscribe through one of the major apps. For anyone new to podcasts, here's something you may not know. Subscribing is free. You can also find the show at craftingsolutionstoconflict.com. Comments or ideas? Let me know. Until next time, I'm Jane Bettle.